Well, thank you so much for the kind introduction, Guy. This is a new approach to what we have thought about for backing OTT supply chains. And I had the opportunity to do this based on what our company's been involved in over the last couple of years in building out a new platform that we call the Content Fabric. And one of the studios, MGM, was very gracious to allow us to put together this case study on how they have embraced this approach to be able to service direct to consumer as well as to business partners. Dave Ballou's talk on the Sony properties is a very good lead-in in terms of the drivers and requirements for doing this. And then I just want to do a short call out to Movie Labs, who wrote a really interesting vision paper on what really are the requirements of the industry, given the creative opportunities as well as some of the challenges of the way that today's cloud-based workflows work to satisfy the consumer OTT appetite. I'm not going to enumerate all these today, but certainly encourage you to take a look at that. What I am going to do is talk to a new supply chain architecture that's specifically focused on getting new entertainment properties to consumers and to business partners. And that is currently deployed at MGM Studios based on this new approach. And I want to hit on really the technical drivers or capabilities around this, because they are quite different from how things have traditionally been done. There is firstly a single substrate for all of the active content. And by that I mean the top shelf library of content that is the foundation for multiple properties. Streaming and servicing is done from source, and that's a very different idea than today's world, which is largely based on creating file-based variants and moving them through various stages of the supply chain and multiple vendors. The streaming actually is just in time from source, and the driver for that is to get highest quality, just as Dave talked about, to avoid rebuffering and to be able to have the highest picture quality. And along with that implies reuse of the same content without making new versions via file copies. And I'll explain how that's possible with some of this technology innovation. Linking of objects, another new idea. That is that when we present static content and dynamic content, video, images, metadata, etc., there's an ability to actually link those assets together inherently in how they're stored, and then to have the presentation layer automatically follow that linking. Content security being taken a little bit differently, and that is that content security no longer has to trust the infrastructure to be correct or behave correctly, which takes out a lot of the barriers that we have traditionally faced. And then finally, having access and rights control built in with the content as opposed to the other way around, right? So a lot of big ideas there, but a very specific and tangible starting point. And that is, I want to talk to the architecture itself, what it is and what it's supporting right now and going into the near future. So first and foremost, the goal of the studio, much like Dave just highlighted, as goals of many media companies, is to be able to reach the public, first of all, with a brand new MGM.com 2.0 website that's focused on literally marketing the company's content directly to the public, to secondarily be able to screen and license from the entire top shelf library, as well as even secondary assets out to licensees globally, and to be able to do that in a modern way that maximizes revenue to the company. And then thirdly, other goals are to build a new servicing portal to be able to get those licensed assets directly to the licensees, and then to continue that theme with pop-up OTT as the business requires. And you might say, okay, how did this get started or why? In MGM's case, they have a new technical team that Doug Rousseau started up a couple years ago. It's really was tasked to modernize and really innovate in the business. And that's what drove this. Now, when you look behind this, right, then you start to see, well, there's this large elliptical thing I've drawn here, and the name is a content fabric. I'll explain what that is in a little, in a moment, but there's really two sides to this in the world. One side is for literally distribution and presentation. That is the consumption of media through steering form, consumption of images, consumption of metadata. The other side is an API for asset servicing. The things that we think of in terms of publishing assets, being able to update and change metadata, updating versions of those, et cetera. And that also includes what we think of as tagging, that tagging coming not only from humans and static processes, but also from machine learning. So with these two sides, right, over on the source side, most of the top shelf library is currently in S3, as it is for many media companies. So a large bucket that stores the content in file form, lots of different types of masters. The other sources of data are a title database with metadata for all shows for the last, 100 years. And then also some ad hoc third-party sources of images, like a box image library. And one of the primary goals of this was to be able to source the master content, the metadata, also supporting imagery into a form, and I'll call it a form because it's a little bit different than we typically think of, that would allow it to be serviced in a version manner all the time, right? Now, who's getting served by this in terms of the business? On the one side are the asset servicing folks, and there are really four different views, if you will, on the content objects that live in the fabric since they've been published. One view is literally an object structure view, right? And we're going to get into this a little bit later, but that includes versioning and also a backing interface that we think of as a contract. And that comes from internal blockchain capabilities. There's also a streamable view, meaning that every asset, once it's published into the fabric, is automatically streamable without having to transcode through a third-party service, push it out to a distribution service, et cetera. And it's inherently streamable globally because of the nature of the fabric. Also, there is a timeline-based view, classic for actually viewing the media, and looking at timecode-based metadata. And that includes timecode-based metadata applied through machine learning to identify objects and people and places, key activities in the content. And then finally, on the other side of the world are the content programmers. These are the folks that are literally deciding on the playlists, what should appear on the public website, what should appear in screening and licensing. And those folks need really straightforward tools to be able to do that kind of programming. In a more traditional world, that's been done in a separate CMS, and then there's some synchronization between some backing asset stores and that CMS that has to go on. In this case, all that's dynamically provided directly from the fabric, so there isn't a requirement for CMS. And then finally, on the front side, each of these properties then can stand alone and be implemented as a user experience, a lightweight single-page app, in this case, and the actual CMS that sits behind those, Drupal, is very thin in its function. Very little goes on in there, creates a shell for the web properties, but the classic heavyweight CMS management you typically do is really obviated. And then finally, you can see over here, security-wise, right? So in this world, the same assets are being served to the public, or parts of these assets are being served to the public, such as trailers and images on the public site, as are being served as part of the highly private screening and licensing portal, right, which also includes full-length title playback. And the full-length title playback is protected by Enterprise OAuth, Secure OAuth integration. That's directly integrated with the fabric authentication, right? So I think those concepts are familiar to everybody. What's really foundationally different is that backing substrate. And I call it a substrate because it really isn't a cloud, at least in today's notion of compute clouds, nor is it a content delivery network as we think of today's CDNs. However, it does eliminate the need for the microservices and separate transcoding and databases that are part of the cloud services, and it also eliminates the need for the CDN. And it works in a novel way to basically take premium video, those top-shelf serviceable assets, and make them consumable through the function of the fabric globally, and works in a unique way. So the Content Fabric's based on software that we created and some interesting technology at its core that we invented, and that is a few key design principles. It's decentralized and has a data distribution and storage protocol that powers this. And I'll explain a little bit about that as I go through. The nature of that is fundamentally bandwidth and storage efficient as compared to more traditional file-based workflows we've all grown up in the last 15 years and how the fabric functions inside. The routing to get at the data that's used to compose and serve media is designed to be ultra-fast and to work just in time, right? And that includes premium videos to allow for low latency, low buffering, or zero buffering, rebuffering kinds of experiences. The content objects also are unique in that they have a special identity in the fabric. They have a contract that backs them, and that gives a distinct interface for access control, which means you don't have to go out to separate systems to implement permissioning or even rights, technically. And the software nature of those contracts allows for doing interesting availability management. And then the content itself gets tagged on ingest automatically with a set of video understanding algorithms. And that doesn't require going out to separate services to do that. It happens intrinsically. And then finally, this is a really important concept that I think Dave set up really well in his talk, which is because of these features, the fact that content is inherently dynamic, ML can and tag metadata drives that dynamic presentation, and because of the smart contract capability, you can do interesting personalization and monetization features you can't do at scale in the more traditional world. And actually, anecdotally, the driver starting point for all of this deployment was a fan-based service that Fabric was adopted for by MGM last summer to kind of prove this out before they went into their major properties. What is this Fabric? Well, it is a software platform that we operate as a platform as a service, end-to-end, and it runs on nodes that we operate at key internet exchange points, right? And I'm going to talk to that in just a little bit, right? You'll see those nodes run this software in this mesh network that does these functions. Why did we choose the internet exchange points? Because those are convenient locations for good peering with the public clouds, where a lot of the media is, for convenient ingest, and because those are well-connected points for good IP transit, IP bandwidth out to audiences, right? Okay, so now to the guts of this, the fabric structure that I've been talking about. A couple of things are really quite different about this. Firstly, the fabric has really three logical layers in the software that work together. The lowest layer is what's really responsible for decomposing incoming media, files, IMF packages, live streams, you name it, into these underlying blobs of data. Those are hashed and they're spread through the network of nodes. The way they spread is systematic, and that's really designed to support this ultra-fast routing and lookup when we're composing output. Another thing that's important about that data layer is those parts are not just the media parts, audio and video, but also the metadata as well as code. And what do I mean by code? Well, one of the most important things we do with media today is transform, package, transcode, et cetera. And everybody's familiar with the idea of producing OTT streaming content, adaptive bitrate streaming through protocols like Dash and HLS, with encoding through standard encoding standards such as H.264, et cetera. So those are the most fundamental aspects of that code layer, but also that's extensible to do additional things like watermarking, for example, or other types of overlays, inserts, et cetera. And what's important about that is that code can be read from that data layer and operated on the fly. And then finally, there's a contract layer, and that's also quite new to today's world. Those contracts are actually a part of every object. When the object gets created, it has a software contract, and that is part of this fabric's function, right? And unlike today's distributed systems, like what we think of as large clouds, this works internally with a decentralized architecture, and that's good for a couple of key reasons. First, there's no single bottleneck, as you often experience with a distributed database back system. It also means the fabric's continuously extensible. And then finally, this kind of an approach allows for having these smart contracts that can be used to record transactions around the objects. So the media inherently carries transaction capability, right? So with these three layers working together, right, in one common software stack that's deployed across a bunch of nodes, right, they do this function dynamically to allow for serving consumable output very efficiently. And firstly, you can see that's driven by the request from the player to stream, for example, or the request from a viewer to get files out. That process triggers the fabric to find the parts that it needs, load the code parts to operate, and actually serve the output just in time. And because of the compositional nature of this, if you like drill in and look at the technical details, we avoid a huge amount of I/O overhead and a huge amount of byte copying, which allows the system to be vastly lighter in infrastructure and also in speed. So with that in mind, I just want to show you a few of the key ideas, right, that came out of this for these cases at MGM. First and most important thing you see is that in the content objects, the media, the metadata, and the images are all linked together and versioned into an object. Also, the masters that are on S3 or other, some were also on local file servers, those stay there and can be referred to by reference on ingest. Serviceable object created automatically. And then the metadata and the static content come from many sources and also allow for flat and timeline-based views. So now for something a little more visually appealing. So let's take, for instance, the first Creed. This is the full-length title mezzanine content object. This was created automatically by the Fabric software on ingest. The ingest process left the master bytes by reference on S3 and created this about 9 gigabyte object. The particulars of the bit rate of that serviceable mezzanine are configurable, right? On ingest, it's immediately playable in full duration, and not only playable from a server, it's playable from the fabric, meaning that on ingest, it's inherently distributed. It's published. That means you have it on the CDN, right? Next point. You can see that each version of the object is hashed, and it has, what is a hash? Just a signature that identifies that version. And as the version changes, if we get new metadata, for example, add new tracks, that hash automatically updates, and we have a full necessary version history. Also, that object can have linked images, and so thousands of images have been uploaded and linked into these objects, and the fabric also presents a familiar file-based API on top of that underlying data layer for viewing those things and doing input and output. And then also this timeline-based view is a view on that very same content object where that video editor is built in app in the fabric platform that's reading that object, displaying all the metadata from these various ML models that have been tagged according to time code, facial recognition, celebrity detection, for example, object detection, landmark detection, OCR, gets all the text, right, et cetera. And that kind of a model allows for presenting any timeline-based data as well as the video and the audio tracks themselves. An interesting anecdote about this kind of a model is it also allows for curating that. And you'll see in a moment that there's an interesting case where many of the clips had color bars, thousands of them actually. And so the choice before going putting those live on MGM.com was either you edit those out or, in this case, set a start point, which is saved as a metadata entry on the object, and then the fabric's dynamic presentation layer reads that start point and plays out from that point. No editing, no changing record. Next point, streaming and serving from the source just in time. And this is probably the most counterintuitive thing, because right now, today's workflows have 5 or 6 different steps that we go through in order to get those variants remade, retranscoded, repackaged, and repushed between all the parties involved to get them live to people. In this case, that whole process happens by virtue of the fabric just in time. It allows for ultra-fast start because of the architecture of it. And the other thing that was really important in this case for MGM was to elevate the quality and evenness of the user experience. And then finally, it allows for applying dynamic capabilities. And I'll take watermarking. So the ROAR property, which is the upcoming property for licensing all of the MGM content, uses a per-user watermark. And that's a very typical technique in security. But in this case, that watermark is applied dynamically as the full-length title is being streamed to the user. And then the user credential is read from the authorization token, in this case, the authorization token coming from Okta, and applied through the Fabric Spit code. Reuse and reversioning without file copies. And for business people, this is like the absolute number one thing, because in their particular case, the MGM.com was the first site to be built like this. And then the business was in a very big hurry to exploit this for other properties. And so the new licensing portal was literally stood up with the first draft of the single-page app overnight, because the same underlying assets, the images, the titles, the clips, et cetera, that appear in that, and even the URL linking structure was already in place. Right? And that's this idea of pop-up properties without having to redo, right? One more thing that is important is thinking about customization, right? So in the case of the licensing portal, there's a lot of selling going on. And I pulled an example here where there was a desire to have specific synopsis on every picture made by the sales team for the sales portal, as opposed to the synopsis that appears on the public website. So a typical way of doing this would be you make a whole nother CMS, and you put in alternate metadata, right? And you also republish all the assets. In this case, none of those things happen. Only one more metadata field was added, and then the front end refers to that particular aspect of the object, right? To make for a different synopsis for one version versus the other. This is the most technical part of what I'm going to say, but for those people who have something to do with front end development, you will understand why this matters, right? The whole idea these days is to basically get content in an over-the-top experience via a browser, a mobile device, a smart TV, or a game console to users. And that might extend to other operating environments. And largely, we use static URL-based naming in order to make that content accessible throughout all those environments. Also, we have a whole search engine optimization environment that's grown up for monetization that expects for content to be found by static URLs. So one of the features that we ended up developing on top of this core fabric architecture is a URL-based API that allows for you to create static URLs, slugs, if you want to call them in short form, that then are dynamically resolved. And specifically to the latest version or a specific version, right? Now, where does this get interesting? Obviously for playout, to be able to, from a set of playout options, get back a URL that will be streamable. But what about also image resizing? So in the case of, if you go take a look through MGM.com, none of those images are bespoke sized. They're dynamically resized at the time of serving. Another example with that is to be able to create a site-level object with one ID, one hash, and then to have URLs that are relative to it for all the rest of the stuff that appears, and have those URLs never change, even though the version of content that's being served behind that can change. This allows for having published versions with controlled updates. It has automatic dependency resolution when we think of how those links interrelate. And most importantly, it gets rid of this dependency on complicated CMSs. And there is no syncing with the CMS, right? And then finally, the tooling gets really easy on the content management side because you can literally, and these are some small apps that are pluggable into our Fabric browser interface that allow for programming the metadata, the playlist, the images, the order, et cetera. And folks that normally do that sort of thing can just go in and point and click directly in order to do that. This point, a little bit technical, but most important for today's world. Content security right now is a big pain because most of it has to do with isolating high-value stuff, right? And, of course, people are familiar with the notion of encryption. But up until very modern times, it has not been possible to have an encryption that doesn't require some amount of trust. By trust, I mean that the keys are somewhere and protected by some software or some hardware. And also that when we re-encrypt content for an authorized party that we don't have to trust that process. There are new areas of crypto that are fast enough and available in open source, if implemented correctly, allow us to do this. That is, have content protected when it's in the infrastructure and re-encrypt it for a person getting it in a way that doesn't have to trust the correctness of the hardware on which that's happening or the software. And this is great for the fact that then you can have a common substrate of infrastructure where everybody's content is not only encrypted in a classical sense, AES, public-private key, but also with owner keys and re-encrypted on authorized access, right, in a way that doesn't have to trust anybody else being correct. And then finally, if authorization's done well, in this case, there's public metadata and private metadata, public website, private stuff, you can tie all that in with authorization systems like Enterprise OAuth. Very last thing I want to talk about then is how does this manifest itself when you're doing really high-value things like screening and licensing, right, as opposed to public marketing and consumer serving. In this case, there is, number one, a real goal of enforcing availability of content. And there's a huge amount of time and money spent trying to get what the contract says enforced in terms of what gets distributed. In this case, that software contract that controls access to the object lets you encode policies. And the policies are really flexible. They can be multi-party by design because of the blockchain auth that's in this. And they also allow for controlling accessibility. In this case, MGM uses this to control which Okta groups have access to which licenses, over what time range do they have access, and also geo-based fencing, if you will. And there's no limit to the particulars of that sort of thing. Also, if this is done right, it can be done fast. So you can have public access via something in this technology that allows for fast state channels and still resolution through the blockchain-based security. And then the last thing I want to talk to is just how this gets used in terms of a data pipeline, because today is a lot about data. Well, one of the key things is what do people watch and what do they like, especially in selling, right? And in this case, there's a feature that allows users to build lists of content that they like, and that list data gets stored securely on behalf of that user into a secure object in the fabric. It's good for a couple of things. First of all, it completes that pipeline, makes all of the viewing provable, but it also gives really an inherent correctness. It's user's data, and that gets shared under the user's essentially consent and using that particular property. Finally, I just want to say a little bit about this platform and its availability. So we were lucky to have some early use cases like this, and it's now commercially available. And feel free to check us out. We're alluv.io. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Michelle.